Trademark Review podcast, turning trademark law into business sense.
Welcome to the latest episode of the World Trademark Review podcast. I'm Tim Lintz, a senior reporter for World Trademark Review, and this week we take a look at a particularly puzzling trademark case in the EU. The case revolves around a disputed trademark for the Rubik's Cube, that retro puzzle that swept the globe back in the 1980s and remains popular amongst puzzle enthusiasts today, especially with so-called cubers, who battle to solve various sized Rubik's Cubes in the quickest possible time. The trademark in question was filed nearly 20 years ago by the UK company which manages the intellectual property of the Rubik's Cube. However, in 2006, Simba Toys, a German manufacturing company, applied to have the mark cancelled, and the fight for the trademark has been ongoing ever since, with a final ECJ decision expected in the next couple of months. To see why this case matters for all brand owners, we talked to Nick Canupius, the external lawyer for Rubik's Brands, to give us the legal perspective of the case, and Thierry Carpeel, who is the Rubik's distributor in France, to offer the business perspective. So let's take a listen. So Nick and Thierry, thanks for joining us today. It would be really great to look at how we got to today. So Nick, let's start with the IP rights that Rubik's brand relies upon. How far back do the IP rights go for the Rubik's Cube?
They do go back to the 1970s, actually. In those days, and also into the 1980s, certain aspects of it were protected by patent laws, but really it's trademark laws that have led the way. And as trademark laws have evolved, so have the rights claimed. So there are trademarks rights, obviously, in the name Rubik and Rubik's. But also, there's the trademark in respect of the two-dimensional depiction of the Rubik's Cube, and of course, the three-dimensional depiction, which has been possible since EU law was amended to enable shape trademarks to be registered. There are also copyright rights in respect of the artistic work in depiction, but really, it's the trademark rights that are the prime rights.
Right, interesting. And Thierry, can you give us a little bit of your background with the Rubik's brand? And can you give us an idea of how robust IP protection practically affects you as a distributor?
Yes, I've been in the toy business for about 25 years now. I relaunched the Rubik's Cube in France in 2002 together with other games. And 3 years ago, I created a company entirely dedicated to the Rubik's range. So intellectual property protection for me means, first of all, security, and therefore ability to invest on innovation, marketing, and as well as enlarging the brand with non-toy licensed items. All this secures a high brand value for Rubik, and it allows a good margin for retailers. Consumers are ready to pay a high price because Rubik means quality, innovative products. It means a good after-sales service, as well as brand known not only for brain teasers, but for various items like stress balls, T-shirts, and so on. So intellectual property protection is essential for my survival.
Right. So I guess that really shows how important the trademark rights are to you. So Nick, can you talk about, you know, this dispute has been going on for a number of years now. Can you give us a rundown of the current trademark in dispute and the numerous legal steps that have got us to this point today?
Well, as I explained earlier, the decision was made to register the Rubik's Cube as a three-dimensional shape trademark once EU law made this possible in the late 1980s. And it was on the 1st of April, no joke intended, 1996, that an application was made to register the trademark as a three-dimensional shape mark in Class 28. And as your readers will be aware, it's always an uphill struggle trying to register a shape trademark. But it was registered on the 6th of April, 1999. And About 7 years later, in November 2006, a German company called Simba made a request to declare this three-dimensional shape trademark invalid. Now, the reason they did this was not because they felt that there was some altruistic principle involved in assessing the, and from an academic point of view, the registrability of shape trademarks. It was to defend an infringement action, because they had been accused of infringing this trademark. And so as part of their defense, they threw the validity of the trademark into dispute. So it was firstly considered by OHIM. The cancellation decision of OHIM, as it then was, decided on 14th of October 2008 that this EU CTM shape trademark had been validly registered. 3 to 4 days later, Simba appealed. In September 2009, the second Board of Appeal of OHIM upheld the earlier decision. And so Simba appealed again. And they then appealed to the General Court of the EU, and I think it was November 2009. And the General Court, a couple of years ago, decided that it would again confirm the two decisions of OHIM. So you had three people at the first cancellation hearing at OHIM, three at the appeal, and then three at the General Court, all deciding that this trademark was validly registered. And Simba appealed again in their desperation to avoid being found to have infringed the trademark. And of course, they appealed to the CJEU. And as you will be aware, there is a procedure there whereby an advocate general provides an opinion on the merits of the dispute. And to everyone's amazement, the advocate general in this case has said that the previous nine people who considered the validity of this trademark registration were all completely wrong, and that he is completely right. And that is his recommendation to the CJEU, that the trademark was not validly registered and that Simba's appeal should be upheld.
And are you able to give a summary of why he's saying that, why he's going against all these other decisions in the past? And what, were you surprised by it?
Very surprised, because in these types of cases, the level of expertise of those people in, and also in the General Court is quite high. So to have nine people all going one way and one person going the opposite way does suggest that something has gone wrong somewhere. So, yes, I was surprised. His reason is quite a technical point, which I will explain briefly now, but it's something that requires a little bit of analysis, which time doesn't permit here. Was that in order, as you will be aware, in order to assess whether or not a 3D trademark can be registered, you have to take account of the technical specifications. And you also, you cannot register a 3D shape mark where the shape is dictated by its functional considerations. So a Coca-Cola bottle, for example, can be shape bottle. And so even though it's a three-dimensional Coca-Cola bottle, it could be any shape, so that trademark's okay. But the argument has been that the Rubik's Cube has to be in the shape of a cube, and that therefore no one should be able to monopolize a three-dimensional puzzle of this kind by registering a cube as its shape. Now, this is nonsense as far as we are concerned. There are 3D Rubik-type puzzles which are different shapes. Indeed, there's one produced by Rubik's itself, which is a sphere rather than a cube. And if we say that if the Advocate General was going to bring some of these considerations into play, he should have done it at least based on the evidence presented in CJEU in the appeal hearings. He seems to have gone off on a bit of a frolic of his own and decided things which weren't ever argued before the CJEU. And so one of the things that the Rubik's team are currently doing is applying to reopen that element of the case so that there can be a proper discussion about what the functional considerations are, rather than allowing an advocate general to decide for himself what he thinks they should be and what the evidence is.
And I guess one consideration that I'm sure some listeners will have in mind is that the ECJ has held that the shape of another colourful objects. Lego bricks are determined solely by their functional characteristics. Well, as you've said, the EU General Court has found the opposite to be true for a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, a boring lawyer's response is that every case turns on its facts, and it's true. But you see, the Rubik's Cube shape is more than just for the puzzle. There are all sorts of other objects produced by the Rubik's Cube which recollect the iconic status of this brand. I've seen tissue holders, I've seen coasters, I've seen fridges, even a fridge in the shape of a Rubik's Cube with a color combination, all trying to create the association between the ultimate product and the original brand, which is the cube. And so it's not true to say that the only purpose of having the cube is to have it as a puzzle, whereas it is true to say the only purpose of having a Lego brick with the little top, the little grooves at the top to interlock with other bricks, is to be able to interlock with other bricks. So I think there is a genuine distinction that can be drawn between the cases. And as I said earlier, 9 other judges all felt that the comparison wasn't legitimate. So why has one gone the other way?
So I guess it'll be interesting to know your perspective in that. You know, there is research that shows that the ECJ does follow the Advocate General's opinion around 70% of the time. So is that a concern for the legal team?
Well, you're right. Although the research that I've seen is that the Advocate General's opinion in IP cases is followed in slightly less cases. So it's still about 60-something percent, but it is less. So there's 40% of cases where it's not followed. And we hope that this will be one of the 40% of cases where it isn't followed. Mm. And I have noticed that the General's opinion has not been followed rather regularly in recent months. There was a recent copyright case on hyperlinking on the internet, the GS Media case, where the CJEU didn't follow the Advocate General's opinion. So it's no guarantee that it will.
There are, of course, a couple of aspects to this case, being the effect of this decision that's come in around a couple of months to the Rubik's brand itself, and also those potential broader effects for a wide variety of brands. So Thierry, it'd be really good to have you explain the practical business impact for you and the Rubik's brand if the decision rules against the Rubik's mark. So for example, does the Rubik's brand face many issues of counterfeiting or unauthorized use, or would enforcing this be made much more difficult without this particular EU trademark?
Well, it's very simple. What will happen? First, various Chinese factories will propose copies at cheap price and poor quality standard. Some European companies will take the chance to sell their own Rubik-like puzzle, and will definitely have to downgrade the product quality to be able to compete with the existing Rubik. Then the big European majors will import their Rubik-like cubes directly from China and sell them at cheap price. This will force Rubik licensees, such as me, to reduce their prices to remain in the market. Rubik will quickly lose its ability to finance what makes its identity, I mean, innovation, quality, marketing, and won't be able any longer to grant a reasonable margin to retailers. So European toy companies selling their Rubik-like cube will face the same problem of tiny margin for retailers. And all kinds of cubes, Rubik and non-Rubik, will gradually disappear from retail shops and leave the door open to price war between majors. And during 1 or 2 years, you will see copies of Rubik's original games and copies of Rubik byproducts flooding Europe. The largest part of margin will be located in China, of course. Price war will make consumer price of the regular Rubik's cube, I think, fall gradually from about 15 to, let's say, 5-6 euros. And at that stage, there won't be any margin left for anyone. No more marketing actions to push this concept. So why continuing? And in 3 years' time, I think Rubik items and Rubik-like items will have almost disappeared from Europe. It means about 100 million euros annual turnover gone, 20 million euro annual VAT gone, 5 million euros injected each year in European warehouses and transportation companies gone. And the European trade, I mean my customers and the customers of the other licensees, will have lost about 30 million euros annual gross margin, and several million euros per year won't be spent any longer for innovation and marketing through European companies. And European states will have lost the corresponding income taxes. That's the future.
And if I could just add something to this, one of the worrying aspects in the Advocate General's opinion is his frequent recourse to talking about the public interest. And it's a worrying development that we have seen that in a number of areas over the last few years, the EU seems to be making its decisions based on policy grounds rather than perhaps legal grounds. And the Advocate General is quite open about it. He's saying as a matter of policy, you know, no one should be able to monopolize the cube shape for these types of puzzles. Well, we're not doing so. But the fact that he's thinking along those lines does tend to suggest that he's following a policy-driven agenda rather than a legal analysis. And that may explain why nine people who have performed a legal analysis have made one decision, and one person who appears to have not made a legal analysis but based it on policy grounds has gone the other way.
Are you able to explain why all brand owners should be paying attention to this case? Why is it so significant?
Well, I think part of what I just said is the answer, actually. There appears to have been a little bit of a retreat over the last few years within the EU for protecting trademarks. There were recent reforms at the EU IPO, as it now is, and generally anyone who's tried to register a community trademark in recent years will know that it's much harder to do so now in certain criteria than it was in the past. And it seems that the EU is trying to make it harder to register a trademark successfully and to then protect it in the courts. Shape trademarks have always been hard to protect, and there seems to be further hurdles being introduced as a result of this Advocate General's opinion. So I think brand owners should be concerned, firstly, because of the general trend that seems to be developing at the EU. But secondly, if you are someone that is a proprietor of a registered shape trademark, then I think you should look to see whether or not your own brand is vulnerable to attack from those who are infringing it. So if someone is pirating your three-dimensional shape trademark, and then you sue them, and they then put in a defense on the basis that it should never have been validly registered in the first place, you've run the risk of having an Advocate General, possibly the same Advocate General, following this reasoning, possibly following a decision of the CJEU, which will then be binding, and that will then declare invalid someone else's three-dimensional register shape trademark. So this is a massive assault on the three-dimensional trademark regime. And what is even perhaps more concerning is that this Advocate General's opinion is, it seems, not even known to the British government at the moment. It's not even on their radar. And yet the repercussions of this case could destroy three-dimensional shape trademark registrations for many British companies.
Can you think of any potential remedies or solutions to this situation? So as you've said, you're seeing the Advocate General going down potentially policy rather than legal lines some of the time, especially in regard to trademark cases. Do you think this requires some kind of lobbying effort from certain organisations? What can be done?
Well, I think there is lobbying going on all the time at different levels. But to me, the most compelling argument is the argument that Thierry was making earlier, which is that if we go down this path and the Advocate General's opinion is followed, it's going to lead to the decimation of registered trademark protection for 3D shape marks for many businesses across the EU. It's not a British issue, it's across the EU. And that in turn will lead to devastating impact on people's jobs, on non-payment of VAT, non-payment of income tax, in response to mass pirated product coming from places like China. The copyright-based industries have faced this problem and lobbied successfully for many, many years. And actually, only last week, there was an announcement from Brussels on the digital environment, which is giving a lot of comfort to rights owners in the creative industries. But at the same time as that is happening, there is a potential disaster awaiting brand owners. And that's why this Advocate General's opinion has to be scrutinised, and hopefully the CJEU ignores it and ploughs its own furrow.
And finally, Thierry, so if there is a worst-case scenario, as we've just been talking about, is from your perspective, from the business perspective, is there any hopes? What will your, you know, next steps be? Do you think, you know, the loss of business that you were describing, is that a foregone conclusion, or are there potential remedies from that you'll be able to conduct?
Frankly speaking, at this stage, I don't see any remedy if in the worst case scenario, unfortunately.
And Nick, what would the next steps be from the legal team?
That's a very good question. At the moment, we are trying to reopen the submissions on functionality, which appear to be at the roots of the Advocate General's thinking, even though no one argued them at the general court hearings, the CJEU hearings. But if that fails, or if those hearings happen and the CJEU still finds in favour of the Advocate General and declares the mark invalid, then it's invalid. And the Rubik's Cube team will, I'm afraid, lose the ability to enforce the three-dimensional trademark, which would be a disaster, for the reasons that we've indicated. But that is a Rubik's Cube problem. The repercussions on all three-dimensional registered trademark shape owners will in turn also be colossal.
So as you heard, there's certainly a lot of passion about the outcome of this case, and for good reason, it seems. As Nick explained, this has the potential to infect the enforceability of all EU shape marks. Certainly, Thierry's dire prediction shows just how high the stakes are from a business perspective. So while the Advocate General's original opinion seemed to slip under the radar somewhat due to the coverage of the EU referendum a couple of months ago, this is a case that all Trademark Council should have on their radars. Indeed, we'll be sure to cover the ECJ's decision when it comes down in a couple of months. Anyway, that's it for another episode of the World Trademark Review podcast. Be sure to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do consider writing a review on iTunes. And if you want to keep up to date with the latest developments in the IP world, be sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or just visit our website at worldtrademarkreview.com. We'll be back soon with another episode, but in the meantime, thanks for listening.
This has been the World Trademark Review podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and be sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook for the latest news and updates. Thanks for listening.